As an 18-year-old, I had not yet refined my methodology for snapping into pure presence. This system is the subject of the chapter Building Your Trigger, in part 3 of the book. But I understood that avoiding the ripple effect of compounding errors had broad application. Then something happened in my life that drove this rule into my soul. It was my habit to walk the 2 miles to PS 116 every Wednesday, planning my class and enjoying the city. One fall afternoon, I was strolling east along 33rd Street, lost in thought and headed toward the school. Everyone who's grown up in Manhattan knows that it's important to look both ways before crossing the street. Cars run lights, and bicyclists ride the wrong way, down one-way streets. Drivers are used to narrowly avoiding bustling midtown crowds, and most New Yorkers are untroubled by the cacophony of sirens, blaring horns, and taxis speeding 10 inches in front of our noses. Things usually flow nicely, but the margin for error is slim. There I stood within the maelstrom of the midtown rush, waiting for the light and thinking about the ideas that I'd soon be discussing with my students. A pretty young woman stood a few feet away from me, wearing headphones and moving to the music. I noticed her because I could hear the drumbeat. She wore a gray, knee-length skirt, a black sweater, and the typical Manhattan office worker's white sneakers for the trek home. Suddenly, she stepped right into the oncoming traffic. I guess she was confused by the chaotic one-way street, because I remember her looking the wrong way down Broadway. Immediately as she stepped forward, looking right, a bicycle bore down on her from the left. The biker lurched away at the last second and gave her a solid but harmless bump. In my memory, time stops right here. This was the critical moment in the woman's life. She could have walked away unscathed if she had just stepped back onto the pavement, but instead she turned and cursed the fast, pedaling cyclist. I can see her now, standing with her back to the traffic on 33rd and Broadway, screaming at the now distant biker who had just performed a miracle to avoid smashing into her. The image is frozen in my mind. A taxicab was the next to speed around the corner. The woman was struck from behind and sent reeling 10 feet into the air. She smashed into a lamppost and was knocked out and bleeding badly. The ambulance and police came, and eventually I moved on to PS 116, hoping that she would survive. As I walked into the school, dumbstruck by the severity of what I had just witnessed, I felt compelled to share a version of the story with my students. I left out the gravity of her injuries, but I linked chess and life in a way that appeared to move them. This tragedy needn't have happened. I explained how this woman's first mistake was looking the wrong way and stepping into the street in front of traffic. Maybe wearing headphones put her in her own world, a little removed from the immediacy of the moment. Then the biker should have been a wake-up call. She wasn't hurt, but instead of reacting with alertness, she was spooked into anger, irritated that her quiet had been shattered. Her reaction was a perfect parallel to the chess player's downward spiral. After making an error, it's so easy to cling to the emotional comfort zone of what was, but there's also that unsettling sense that things have changed for the worse. The clear thinker is suddenly at war with himself, and flow is lost. I've always visualized two lines moving parallel to one another in space. One line is time, the other is our perception of the moment. I showed my students these lines with my hands, moving through the air. When we're present to what is, we're right up front with the expansion of time. But when we make a mistake and get frozen in what was, a layer of detachment builds. Time goes on and we stop. Suddenly we're living, playing chess, crossing the street with our eyes closed in memory. And then comes the taxicab. That chess lesson was surely the most emotional I've ever taught.